Well, welcome to another episode of the Ramon Foster Show on DKPittsburghSports.com. I am Eddie Provident filling in for DK as he travels back from New York, probably very somberly, Ramon. Yeah. And I am with the one and only Ramon Foster. Rough weekend for Pittsburgh sports fans, buddy. I also have to mention that we are brought to you by GetGo Cafe and Market. I can't forget that, man, because I've been sipping on their coffee all morning to try to get myself together here. How you been, man?
Necessary. I'm good. I saw DK tweeting. I get up early, of course, but I get up to like just straight nonstop tweets from DK, and I'm like, golly, how long was he up, and how intense did it finally get for him, man?
It was a long night for the crew at DK Pittsburgh Sports. Let me tell you that, buddy. It was a long night.
Yeah, I would tell you what Coach Tomlin also likes to say. Eddie, nobody cares about the labor pains. Just deliver right, the damn baby.
That's right, man. That's right. Ramon, we had rookie camp this weekend. And, you know, you and DK talked a lot about football shape and these rookies having to get into football shape. And you kind of brought up the second year guys. And that got me thinking, what is the, you know, when you're a rookie, you know, everyone has that kind of like, okay, it's the honeymoon phase, you know, like, all right, you know, he's a rookie, he's learning, he's trying to figure things out. But now second year, you got guys like Najee Harris and Pat Freiermuth and Kendrick Green and Dan Moore Jr. These dudes are going to be expected to produce a little bit more and be, you know, we talked about leaders on Thursday. They're going to be expected to be a little bit more, you know, playing a little bit more of a leadership role. What's the gap? You know, what's the difference between that rookie season for a player and then that second year season in the NFL? What, like, what's the expectations? What's different about that for them?
Everything. Absolutely everything. One, you don't have the excuse of school, which that's a huge part as far as getting to the NFL. You don't have that. You have money in your pocket, you have time on your hands, and you're around professionals. So when you're given that first year, yeah, it can be a little bit of a shell shock or just like cultural shock, whatever you want to call it, a big adjustment that you're going to need as far as being necessary to getting adjusted to the league. But when you have that year and you make it to the offseason, you understand, if I watch the veterans and saw what they did, then I'll be all right. If I take now all of this free time that I have to understand that being a better pro into year two is going to be necessary, like, that's the separator. You don't have the excuse of being young and dumb anymore. You are a pro. You lasted an entire year. I don't care if it's practice squad either. You lasted an entire year. I've seen guys be on practice squad my rookie year and then end up making the 53-man roster the next year simply because they understood the task at hand. You understand how to work. You understand when to work, and you also understand that the mental side of it is what's going to carry you further along more than anything. So making that jump, there are no more excuses anymore, especially if you played also. And all those guys that you named, they played as far as first-year guys go. So now you're expected to be a true pro, and that's why it's so much pressure on the second-year and third-year guy. And the other part of it, too, is you'll be quickly forgotten if you don't take that next big step. Because what are they always looking for? Either your replacement or somebody to make the team better. And it can be indirectly you getting cut because they need an extra running back or they need an extra wide receiver, or you'll end up cutting a D tackle because I need an extra outside linebacker because he did something in his rookie year that's more appetizing than what you did. Those old tricks that you did your rookie year, they don't matter anymore. And that may sound blunt, but that's just how it is. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, Dan Moore, you started 17 games. So guess what? Do it again, but this time let's have less MEs. Let's have less sacks. Let's show that we've gotten better in the run game. Like, that right there is where the start of it all begins. Is we've seen your baseline. So now we got to take the step up and just be even more consistent, mentally sharper, and stronger and more physical going into that second year.
See, that's an interesting point, you know, the baseline idea, because, you know, the Steelers actually have two players, I think, that are a perfect example of kind of both ends of the spectrum. You've got somebody like Najee Harris, who I think he surpassed all expectations in his rookie year. And so I guess the first question for me would be, how would somebody like Najee Harris, you know, avoid that sophomore slump that everybody talks about?
Being cautious this offseason, just being completely honest with you. Like, he did everything you asked him to do. Had the reps, had the yards, had the catches also. I think his pass pro, a little bit better. I think that slip of getting outside of your box and doing things you're not used to, that's another way that you can lose yourself in that game too, is trying to do too much. Well, why am I trying to be a full wide receiver when my position is running back? Unless it's a package that's set for you, or instead of getting out and or instead of protecting, you're trying to get out in coverage a whole lot quicker than you're supposed to. Like, for him, that's the step he's got to take. First year Pro Bowler, that's freaking phenomenal, man. I don't think you can get much better than that as far as a rookie go, unless you're like Michael Parsons making all pro.
Yeah.
You know, but even him, those small mistakes, like, I'm sure it's something in Najee where all of the 31 other teams have something as far as, now we see his film. Now I can see when he's protecting, his head is shifting side to side, or his feet is a certain way, or when he grabs the ball and go right, he's only going to get 2 yards. Instead of he goes to the left, he'll get 5 yards. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's those types of things for him to where he's got to beat his own stigmas. Like, for me and my me transition, I knew that I had to be able to cut off the inside pass rush.
Okay.
My rookie year, it was frustrating to not be able to get it, but it's also one of those things I was giving grace a little bit, because why? I'm a rookie. I'm getting it done, but I need to get it done a little bit more efficiently. So going into the second year, I worked on my post foot, meaning I played on the left side, my right foot cutting off the defenders. For a guy like Najee, a guy like Kendrick Green, also, you snap the ball well and you can move in space. Now we need to see how you move, how much better you're going to get as far as moving people off the line of scrimmage. And you see what I'm saying? As far as now we've seen it. It's the tape, Najee. What tips are you giving away that you need to hide moving forward? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Dan Moore, run versus pass. What does your set look like as opposed to the run or the pass? It's all of those, because now everybody's got the test. Everybody got the answers to the test on you.
Yeah, and you brought up Kendrick Green, and that was going to be the second name I brought up, because I think he's at the other end of the spectrum where, you know, and this is not I'm not like coming at Kendrick Green, because I think they put him in a difficult situation having him start as a rookie at center when he played majority guard at Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But for a guy like Kendrick Green, he's on the opposite end where he doesn't have to worry about the sophomore slump, because he really didn't bring it he had a rough rookie season. So what's the mentality for someone like him? He's got that chip on his shoulder, and, you know, he wants to prove, you know, like, listen, I know I can be here. I know I can play. I have that pedigree. Mm-hmm. What's the kind of things that he has to do, and how does someone like Kendrick Green look at it to come into the second year and kind of like prove the doubters wrong?
I think first and foremost for him, strength.
Yeah.
Even if he was strong, he needs to look it out on the field.
Yeah, he was a little undersized, and you saw it, man. He got bullied around a little bit. It was kind of unfortunate.
And you know what? He's probably really doggone good in the weight room, but it needs to translate over to the field. That's number one for him, and I think that's got to be the most glaring thing that everybody recognizes from him in OTAs and while playing the game during the season too. And the other part is fighting that, mentally getting past those critics, us talking about what he should have done and how it wasn't the year that you thought. And look, the luster of you is gone. You're wearing 53. You're the same skin tone as Marquise. No, we don't care about that, because it's clear you're not him. So you need to fight that mentally and get over that hump of showing that no matter what y'all think of me, I'm going to be this regardless. And he needs to become the first Kendrick Green, as opposed to trying to chase somebody else that wore 53. And I'm not saying he did that, but the pressure of wearing that number directly after Marquise retired and everybody felt how they felt about him as a player.
Some big shoes to fill, man.
He got to fight that, Eddie.
Yeah. And I will say this about Kendrick Green, watching him in training camp last year. He had some fight, man. Like he was aggressive in training camp. And if he can kind of capture what he had there and bottle that up and kind of take that onto the actual playing field and not just the practice field, I think he's going to be a good pro. I really do. This isn't, like, again, I said this before I brought him up. This isn't me knocking Kendrick Green. This is me just saying, look, it is what it is. That was your performance your rookie year. I'm excited to see him, you know, get into a battle and step it up and see what he brings year two. You know what I mean?
So just to say that, as far as how important year two is also, before we on our way out on this one, Eddie, is this. A guy that kind of missed the boat in his year two, Chase.
Mm-hmm.
And what, Chase Claypool? Now, what happens directly after that? You start looking over his shoulder and say, well, he didn't do what we were expecting him to do in year two, so who's after him? Like, those are the conversations that happen when you miss that jump, whether even more professionally or more production into your year two.
Yep. Ramon, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about Pittsburgh sports in general, because, you know, we know that saying, when you play Pittsburgh, you play the whole city. And I want to talk about your time in Pittsburgh, because you saw a lot of good hockey and a lot of good baseball during your time in Pittsburgh. So we'll be right back after this break. All right, welcome back to the Ramon Foster Show on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network YouTube channel. Ramon, last night was tough for me. I mean, not only was I up late because I had to help out DK with the column and get all the stuff done for that, but man, I'm a hockey guy. Like that's my sport. That, you know, Mario Lemieux was my guy growing up. That was, you know, that was my idol growing up. And man, the Penguins lost a heartbreaker in Game 7. And I know this isn't a hockey show. We're not going to get into breaking down the hockey game. I'll do that with Andy Shirey some other time. But what I want to talk to you about is that idea that when you play Pittsburgh, you play the whole city. We saw Coach Tomlin at one of the Penguin games, one of the first round playoff games. Crowd went absolutely nuts when they showed him. You know, we've seen videos of Ben in the offensive line at Penguins playoff games. When the Pirates made their run, we saw, you know, a bunch of Steelers and Penguins at those games. We saw a bunch of Penguins at Steelers playoff games. One of the things that, you know, as fans, you know, and, you know, I'm only a year into this media thing, so I'm still fresh on that. I love seeing the athletes support each other. For you, what is that camaraderie like, and what is it like to, you know, to have the backing of like the local baseball team, the local hockey team, and then going and supporting them when they play well? Like what is that? How much more fun does it make it for you as an athlete?
No matter how good or bad any team can be in Pittsburgh, you're always backed by the others, is what I always recognize. And it seems like I know baseball has had its struggles here and there as far as, you know, trying to stay above the line as far as wins and losses. But the love, the reception, the way all of them blend in with one another, like, I feel like the Pirates know who the Steelers are. We know who the Penguins are, and all of them just intertwine with one another to where if we need tickets or we go to a game, there's always something or somebody that's going to say something to you or make you feel a part of that organization as much as you are of your own. Like, you inherit a family when you're a Pittsburgh fan. Like, it just, it's that simple, man. And I'll never forget, we go there, we get the jerseys, and as far as the hockey games go, or we get an opportunity, we see one of the guys, and in public. Like, I'll never forget, like, one of the first baseball jerseys I ended up getting was a freaking McCutcheon. You know what I'm saying? And like, and having the opportunity to have met him also, and let my kids who also play baseball meet him, and just the humbleness of it, just how cool he was as a person, and more than anything, just you're just guys that's in the city that love sports, that embraced by a fan base that also loves you too. There is nothing better than that, man. And it's not going out of the way. It's just the way we do stuff in Pittsburgh. And I've always been proud of that fact, you know?
Yeah. Now, you're in Nashville, and when the Penguins played the Predators in a Stanley Cup, we saw, you know, Taylor Lewin and all the offensive linemen there. You know, like, that was the big thing, shotgunning beers through the catfish. Is it, like, in your travels, is it like that everywhere, or is it something special with cities like Nashville and Pittsburgh and, you know, a few others?
I think it's something special in Pittsburgh. Like, what the Titans and Penguins have going on here, but Predators have going on here. I know I can't say that too loud because they hate the Penguins, okay? I think Pittsburgh's just different in general. And when you draw a baseline of what's expected, it's really just win. You know, and I always probably reference Kev talking about, you know, well, you did it, now do it again. Like, some people or some fan bases are shocked that they can win. They get mad at the fact that they don't win. Pittsburgh win, it's like, okay, well, do it again. If you lose, it's always the next opportunity. That's the way I always look at the way we are as opposed to other organizations. I'm talking about football specifically and just the city and Pittsburgh in general. Like, no matter what, everybody's going to come out and support the friggin' Pirates. And it's because that hope of winning, not just, what do I want to call it? Not just spite as far as going to see them, but you genuinely want to see that turnover and them win. The Penguins have done their thing. Like, it's behind them. With us in that city, man, it's always the expectation. You don't mention just winning your division. You mentioned the Super Bowl. They mentioned the Stanley Cup. The Pirates, they're going to get there at some point, okay?
We'll get there, yep.
But the base is always loyal and is not overly toxic. It is some toxic, you know, parts of the fan base, but it's not overly toxic as far as expectations or at least the common sense aspect of it. It really shows itself when you're a Pittsburgh fan.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I to bring it full circle back to the Steelers, I do think that the Rooneys set that standard. I think it was the Rooney family because, I mean, if you look at the Pirates, they were good in the, you know, in the 60s. They won those 1960 World Series. They won the 71 World Series, 79. But that, I think that culture in Pittsburgh changed.
Yeah.
When the Rooneys drafted Joe Green. And that football team and the Steelers, that organization started to climb. Because when you win four Super Bowls in 6 years, Moan, you've set the bar. That's there's nothing else now. You can't do any better. And that's what the expectation is. And credit to the Rooney family for keeping that expectation for as long as they have with this organization. And I think it has bled through this whole city that as fans, we don't accept anything other than excellence. And as players, you guys don't expect any, you don't accept anything other than excellence.
Yeah.
You know, all the different stories you told of, you know, holding people accountable in the locker rooms and making sure people are coming and doing what they're supposed to do day in and day out. You know, I think that all started with the Rooneys back in the, you know, 60s and 70s, setting that foundation. And that's a testament to that family and what they did for this city.
It is. And it's kind of bled, like I said, into the fan base as far as, and I know we're going to be like, we need a Super Bowl. But I think more than anything, since we've had a relatively recent or Stanley Cup, that you kind of say to yourself, I know it's hard. I feel like we have that type of common sense. Like, I know it's hard. Would the Steelers love to win a Super Bowl? You doggone right. You know what I'm saying? But the understanding of what the game entails and how the business has to move and shift and what's necessary to actually win. I know the biggest frustration probably came for us during the times that we just couldn't get past New England.
Yeah.
And then you just look at it and you just say, well, it was just hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it wasn't a matter of team. It was just a matter of one or two plays. And Eddie, you're a coach, you know, one or two plays
makes the game, man. Makes or break the game.
And that's, where do you find it to end in a tie? To you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like we cracked the folded, but when you got 11 people on the field trying to do the exact same thing, there's going to be one or two plays. And I think that's where football is very unique. And I love the understanding of the fan base to be like, as long as we're above the line, we got a shot. And that's all you really want as a fan base or as an organization.
Yep. And it's to wrap this up. So, you know, talking about all this, is there one moment that not football, if we separate football and your time in Pittsburgh, what is your favorite Pittsburgh sports moment?
Favorite Pittsburgh sports moment for me, non-football.
In your time here.
Man, I think it was watching and seeing Kutch. Seeing the all blacked out play-in game that they had also.
Yeah, yeah.
Seeing that, getting a chance to meet Kutch, because I'll be honest, that made me more of a baseball fan, or just going to PNC Park. Mm-hmm. If you hadn't been, the tickets are cheap because why? It's baseball, so many games.
Boy, but isn't it a beautiful in that place park, to be, man?
That backdrop, like, that's one of the things I miss about Pittsburgh is being able to go there. I know baseball is a boring sport and all that type of stuff, but go there. I think it'll change your mindset on, especially if it's a nice, cool Pittsburgh day too.
Yeah, yeah. It's if you've never experienced PNC Park, I can't recommend it enough. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. And that blackout game, I wasn't there, but boy, was that watching that on TV, man. That was one of the highlights of my sports fandom. I tell you that, like, getting to watch playoff baseball with my dad for the first time. Couldn't beat it, man. Couldn't beat it. It was something.
Could not.
When we come back, we've got a really good Hey Moan, because I think this one is close to home for you, man. And I'm interested to hear your answer. You haven't given it to me yet. So we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Ramon Foster Show. Ramon, I got a good Hey Moan question here. I've been waiting to hear your answer to this question. This one comes from Joseph Reed on YouTube, and he says, Hey Moan, is it the QB that makes the receiver or the wide receiver that makes the QB? Man. I'm really curious to get your answer since you played with Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown.
Whew.
I'm going to shut up and I'm going to put you on the spot.
There's so many ways, man, Eddie, to break this down. It legitimately is so many ways to break this down. I think when you, okay. I'll say this. My two biggest questions this offseason is this. Can Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes make another one? Hmm. Patrick lost Tyreek. Hmm. Aaron lost Devontae. Can they make another one in terms of Pro Bowlers, all pros? So when I say that, I almost make it seem like it's the quarterback that's more important, right? And in all actuality, I think a good bit of the credit, I don't want to say more because more seems like I'm giving them less credit. A good bit of the credit does go to the quarterback simply because being able to put it on the spot, being able to lead them a certain way as far as throwing the ball and letting them run after catch, being able to communicate with them and let them know, hey, I need you here instead of here. You know, but on the other side of it, what the receiver does after he get the ball in his hand, that's on them. You know what I'm saying? Like throwing a 5-yard slant is just that. Hell, that can be a 5-yard catch, and that's that. But watching a quarter, watching a wide receiver catch a 5-yard slant and go 70 yards, that in itself is the wide receiver.
Yeah.
Now, again, I brought this up to you before when we were talking about this conversation. Why do wide receivers become divas? And it's this: a running back can get a handoff and do whatever he's going to do for you. Either he's going to run the daylight or he's going to run into the back of the offensive lineman. Okay. Offensive lineman, they control their work. Tight ends, they get the ball when necessary, right? Mm-hmm. Who else? Defense, that's a position all in its own. Like, if you want to be that guy, you go make those plays on defense. Why do wide receivers become divas? It's because it's the only position in which you rely on somebody else directly to get your job done. If your quarterback has a noodle arm, if your quarterback is very inaccurate, if your quarterback can't process how to break down coverages and he's throwing pick after pick after pick, then that's on them, right? You see what I'm saying?
What are you gonna do?
Yeah. What are you gonna do? Then you become a diva, or a quarterback can ice somebody out. I'm gonna throw to him. I'm gonna throw to my number two more than I throw to my one today. You know what I'm saying? So that's where the dependency on the position always causes some type of issues here or there. Or you want to go somewhere else, i.e. Devontae, to go play with Derek Carr because, one, that's his best friend. Mm-hmm. They went to the same college. But, well, let me show you that it was more me than it was you, Aaron. Yeah. You know, like, it's those types of things. Now, the talent in itself is always inside of the wide receiver, but you do have to have that quarterback that can make it happen.
See, I have a theory on this, and it's a little all over the place. I think a good quarterback can make a great wide receiver.
Yeah.
But I think a great wide receiver can make an elite quarterback. And here's my point with that. Tom Brady's best regular season, who did he have as his number one wide receiver?
Was it Randy Moss?
Randy Moss. Randy Moss. Look at the numbers that Tom Brady put up with Randy Moss. And then look at the... Now, look, I'm not saying his numbers were bad with anyone else. But look at what they did that year when the two of them were clicking together.
Yep.
You put Randy Moss with a quarterback like Tom Brady, and he makes Tom Brady go to that next level. I'm the biggest quarterback fan. I could watch dudes throw footballs all day, every day.
Yeah.
But if you're a Hall of Fame quarterback and you don't have a good wide receiver,
yep,
you're Dan Marino.
Okay. That's very, very fair when you break it down. Again, like I said, you can't give credit to one without giving credit to the other also. But if you ask me what I'm picking first, I'm picking the quarterback.
I'm probably picking the quarterback too, but I'm just like, I mean, and I, when I said, look, because I'm going to have everybody in the comment section coming after me because I said it sounded like I was negative about Danny Marino. Look, Danny Marino, in my opinion, is the most talented quarterback to ever play the game.
Yeah, yeah.
But without a good wide receiver, he couldn't win a Super Bowl. Well, he faced his only time he went up against Joe Montana, and look at the receiving core that he had.
Versus what he had, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the difference right there. When you are a great quarterback, the difference then becomes, can you find that receiver to make you elite? Look at Ben and AB. Ben was always a great quarterback, but when you got prime AB with him, Ben went up to that next level too. So I think that if you're a great quarterback, you need that receiver to get you to the elite level.
That's true. One elevates the other. Yeah. But if you're asking me, I'm choosing the quarterback first simply because, and you're not wrong in saying this, the receiver can elevate. But in the same sense, look at what was AB minus Ben though too. Yeah. Now maybe age played a factor in his other issues. But again, look, Emmanuel Sanders only played with Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Can we just say that also? Can we acknowledge?
Is that a smart agent? Is that what that is?
Or a smart player?
Or a smart player, maybe?
Ben, Peyton, Breeze, Josh Allen, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a good quarterbacks, man.
Who's played with a better arm than friggin' E?
Dude, that, you know what? That's a good question. That might be another good Hey Moan section.
That's a hell of a friggin' group that you could.
Moan, I never thought of that until you just said it right now.
But let's say this, though. He's a very smart guy. Yeah, he also knows what move to ticker and keeps him in his league this long also.
He knows what's going to get him paid.
Exactly. It is his quarterback. So, 5-yard slant, going 70, that's the wide receiver. Mm-hmm. But being able to dice apart a defense with a wide receiver that you're, you know, on the same page with, I think that goes towards the quarterback.
Yeah, I at the end of the day, if you give me, you know, first overall pick and I'm taking the best receiver or the best quarterback, I'm taking the best quarterback because I think that makes your whole team better.
I mean, let's look at this also. What are they trying? Well, to your point, though, this is your point. I was about to make it for you. What did Miami do this offseason to try to protect their quarterback?
Tyreek Hill.
They went and got them wide receivers.
Yeah. I think this is one of those circular arguments that could just happen all day.
And
it could never end. And you can make a point and I can make a point and we can just go back and forth and then we could trade sides and we'll just keep going, man. Joseph Reed with one of the better Hey Moan questions,
I
think.
Good.
And it's such a simple question. Everybody talks about it all the time. I can't believe it took this long to get it on this show.
And we didn't tiptoe around it, but it's like, well, what do you choose?
Yeah. I mean,
what do y'all believe? Tell us.
Yeah, I want to see in the comments section. Is it the quarterback that makes the wide receiver or the receiver that makes the quarterback? Let us know in the comments. And while you're there, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. Make sure you're getting alerted to all of our shows. Make sure you're getting all the Ramon Foster shows when they come out. Ramon, this has been fun, man. I'm going to have to figure out how to keep DK busy so I could do this every once in a while. It's been nice hopping on and hanging out with you on this side of the camera rather than, you know, in the text messages and on the producer side. So I have to figure out a way to keep him. Maybe the Pirates get good and he'll have to start covering them a little more. I don't know. We'll figure something out. But this has been fun. And we didn't even get into any bourbon talk today, man.
We didn't. But guess what? Soon enough, Eddie.
We'll get there, man. Hey, everybody, thank you for watching. We always appreciate you. We don't do this without all of you guys. Ramon, thanks for your time, man. Always good hanging out with you.
Absolutely.
For DK Pittsburgh Sports and Ramon Foster, I'm Eddie Provident. DK will be back tomorrow. We'll see you next time.